Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Are you ready to dream on? Do you know how to fly high and soar among the clouds? Get ready to live adventurously, because the Laura Meeks Show starts now. Listen as Laura lifts you off the ground while teaching you how to fly high. Forget ground-level drama and be prepared to confront your dreams head-on as she encourages you to navigate towards your North Star and into what just might be the best life you've imagined. Dream on. Live adventurously on The Laura Meeks Show.
Living adventurously. That's what we do here. This is Laura Meeks. Welcome to The Laura Meeks Show. We come to you every other Wednesday at noon here Pacific time. It's an absolutely wonderful day to be alive, given all the things that are going on. Our motto is dream on, fly high, and live adventurously. We are here to, a lot of the things that have happened in my life, and the joy of me doing this show is that so many things have transformed in my life. And I've learned a lot of interesting things. I've met a lot of interesting people as all this has happened. And as I'm getting into my more mature years, I have decided that it would be great if we could pass on some of the interesting stuff that we've learned. And so I scout around and find some of the most interesting people I can find to bring to you so that you can look in, figure out some things that you want to do in your life. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing you to Dr. Alan Leica. He is a world-class cosmetic dermatologist whose life in 2003 took a sudden twist, and this is going to be the fun of today. He suddenly found himself with a drop foot, and they did some testing, and he was given a life, a life sentence. He already has a life sentence.
A very short life.
Diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease, but as you can see over there or over there, depending on where you are, he's still living. So there is the rest of the story, and we're going to talk about the rest of the story, because that's a fun and important place. He wrote an incredible book. The book is called The Secrets of Living a Fantastic Life. Discover the 13 Golden Pearls, and we'll tell you how you can get a hold of that book as we get to the break at the half-hour mark. And he co-wrote that with Harriet Tinka. If you've been following along in my show, Harriet was with me last month, and we talked specifically about what had happened to Harriet. But today is Dr. Leica's turn, and I want to with that, I'm going to introduce you, Dr. Leica. Welcome aboard.
Happy to have you. It is a pleasure to be here. I was on the show once before with you, with Harriet, and we had a fantastic time. And I'm so delighted to be here again. It's beyond belief. And every day when you've been through all the things that I have is a day that's special. Every day that I'm given that's extra is a bonus day. So all I can say is it's been an amazing life, and I'm glad that I can help others along with it. And that's what I've dedicated my life to.
Yeah, no, interesting. Give us a version of your story, because people heard it, but for those who are just joining us, this is an interesting path.
You know, I was walking with my wife in Disneyland and my youngest daughter. It was spring break in 2003. It was hot. It was sticky. It was the end of the day. And my wife turned to me. She said, "What's wrong with you, hon?" You know, for once in my life, I hadn't said anything wrong. I hadn't done anything wrong. I hadn't even thunk anything wrong. But she said, "What's wrong with you?" And I was taken aback. I said, "Dear, what do you mean?" And she said, "Listen to your foot." And I said, dear, what do you mean, listen to your foot? Listen to my foot, yes. And so I said, okay. And my right foot had suddenly and mysteriously developed a right foot drop. You know, your brain is designed that when you're walking, your feet lift up. But my right foot was not lifting up. It was flapping on the pavement with each step I was taking. It was making an audible slap, slap, slap sound. And so I said to my wife, I have no idea what's wrong. She said, did you have a stroke? I said,
Let me check my stroke meter.
You're a doctor. I'm a doctor. This is not how strokes present. Well, she said, well, there's something wrong. When we get back, you better get this checked out. Well, when you're told to get something checked out by your significant other.
I was going
to
say, this is important.
This is serious. You know, you're not going to put the... So I went to see hundreds of doctors. They did PET scans. They did CAT scans. They did SCAN scans. And you know what they showed at the end of the day, Laura? You're right. Absolutely nothing. Zip. They showed nothing. And you know, when doctors find nothing, you know what they do?
Make it up.
They do more tests. Doctors aren't going to stop there.
Yeah.
I think I had tests that weren't even invented yet. And they kept on doing tests. And finally, I found myself on the doorstep of a world-leading neurologist. You know, they're the brain doctors. They have the answers to all the puzzles. So what they say, go. And I walked in and he said, hi, Dr. Leica. I said, hi. He said, you better be sitting down when I tell you this. I said, why? I have a dropped right foot. He said, no, you don't. You have Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. Get your affairs in order. In 6 months, you're going to be dead. Wow. Okay. I said,
nice bedside manner, right?
Well, and I said, is there a way to prove this diagnosis? And he said, of course, an autopsy.
Well, then I'll wait.
Well, I shot back because I was pretty lippy at the time. I said, I'm not going to die to prove you wrong. But, you know, Laura, when you go through something like this, you go through a grief reaction. You go through the stages that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote in her book on death and dying. And they are the following. You go through anger. You're angry as hell. You're mad. You just can't contain your anger. You go through denial. The state of denial is not just in Egypt. It exists. Denial. And you deny that there's anything wrong. So I'd work 18, 20 hours a day. I said, oh, there's nothing wrong. I can do this. But, you know, in your heart of hearts, you knew that there was something wrong. You knew there was a reason for your wrong. But then you go through bargaining. Oh, God, please don't let this happen. I'll do anything if you don't let this happen. I will, you know. And then you go through depression. Depression is one of the worst states because everything black. You can't eat. You can't sleep. You can't move. You want to stay in bed all day and just let the world go on. But, you know, at the end of this, I went to my wife and I said, dear, we've got to figure this out. She said, well, you're smart. You're really smart. You can figure this out. You can figure it out where other doctors can't. And, you know, back in 2008, Laura, something happened. They invented this wonderful thing called the internet. You ever heard of the internet?
My story involves the internet, too. So I like this part
then,
of it.
Then you know the internet. Yeah. But, you know, back in 2003, it was pretty primitive. You had to use a dial-on connection. That's when your phone would contact another phone and go, ria, 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 for 15 minutes or so. And finally, you didn't even know you connected, but you connect. And back then, you had to communicate by using a language like DOS or one of these primitive, because our computers had 65 bits. They didn't have a giga or a tetrabyte of information. So you had to look up each individual site. And I had friends that were nerds, and they helped me. And I found a doctor in Colorado Springs, Colorado, by the name of David Martz, who had a story very similar to mine. But he got worse much more rapidly. And he was on his deathbed. So doctors from around the world were coming to say goodbye to David. He was a very well-known doctor. And a doctor from Texas came up to David and said, David, I think there's something wrong with your diagnosis. And David said, what? What do I have? He said, I think you don't have ALS. I don't think you have Lou Gehrig's disease. I think you've been bitten by a tick and you have chronic Lyme's disease. David said, well, what's that? Well, the doctor from Texas says, well, this is a rare disease. When you get bitten by a tick, it causes a lot of symptoms that mimic other diseases. And he said, if I'm right, I can make you better. And David said, well, what do I have to lose? I'm dying. So the doctor started him on treatment, and like Lazarus, he arose from the dead. Within 2 weeks, he was back to his regular self. Now, David started a clinic treating people with this weird disease. It was called the Colorado Chronic Disease Clinic. And so I knew I had to get in touch with him. It was a weekend, so I phoned every hospital in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and I met up with David at the Methodist Hospital. And David and I talked for hours, and he said, can you come down? I said, when, David? He said, right now. I said, David, it's our Thanksgiving weekend here in Canada. My wife's invited 50 people over. He said, well, aren't there any planes in Canada?
Hey, let me check.
So I went to my wife. I apologized. I said, I must be away this weekend. And she said, why? I said, well, there's a doctor in Colorado Springs that might have some answers for my problems. And she said, well, then go. I'll take care of the 50 people. That's nothing, she said. We'll do that. So I got on a plane from Edmonton to Denver. It was great. 3 hours, perfect flight. Then I got on a plane from Denver to Colorado Springs. It was the flight from hell. At the end of the day, the air comes off the desert, and it creates something called eddies. Now, to a pilot, that means turbulence. And you know what turbulence means? The plane goes up and down, up and down. It was like the drop of doom 15 times over. So we drop 100 feet, climb back there, drop 200 feet, climb back, drop 300 feet. Oh, my God. When I got off that plane, I was green. But, you know, a miracle happened. There was David on the tarmac to meet me. This was 2003. We did not have all the high security precautions we do right now. So David was there, and he said, let's talk. And we talked for hours. And at the end of the talk, he said, I think history is repeating itself. I think I could start you on treatment and you'll get better. So for over 30 years, I maintained my status as a top cosmetic doctor until I walked away last year to do more in the service department of helping others come out of their problems and help them get to the status they need to be.
Well, I love that story for a thousand reasons. Let me cover a couple things, because it's funny. Part of my story deals with the internet too, and when I tell it, I tell it very much like you do, because I was sitting in Guam, and I had an Apple II Plus computer. So I had it had 128K total memory. I mean, your watch probably has a million times more than that right now. I mean, there was no hard drive. There was no anything else. That was like everything it had. And you're right. I mean, we were talking in DOS. And for me, part of my challenge was I was researching. This is kind of where I want to go. I had an issue, and I was searching on the internet, and I happened to use a telephone connection just like you described. I had a modem connected to a phone in Guam that got me back to the United States to CompuServe, and CompuServe had a new thing called the chat room, and you could go into the chat room and talk to people, which meant that, you know, I had a green monitor, green screen, and the little text was coming down the line. That was chatting. But while I was there, this is where I had an aha moment. It was in the chat room that somebody started talking about transgender, of which I knew not anything about. But when they were describing what they were feeling, it was like lightning bolt. It was like, oh my God, this is the two pieces of the puzzle that I've been missing. And now I get it. But all of that came through this magical internet. And kind of what I want to ask you about is this, is part of your story has to do with this fact that, and I'm going to use this term, MD, minor deity. And I say it that way because I think most people see a person in a white coat, and you were one. Most people see a person in a white coat, and they give you the diagnosis, and that becomes your truth because they're a minor deity. They know. They're a doctor. They have all the answers. And if you've gone through all these tests and you've got Lou Gehrig's disease, unlike 99% of us lower humans, you looked at the doctor and said, wait a second, there's got to be something else. You probably don't have it right. It's like, well, and then you personally went on a search. Why did you not just go, okay, I got Lou Gehrig's, I'm just gonna wait it out?
Well, you know, I guess I've always been stuck with the stubborn gene all my life, and I have always, I've always realized that it's not what happens to you, it's what you do with what happens. You know, when I was a kid, I had a very poor background, and people told me, you know, you'll be lucky if you get a government job, or if you work for Sears, or if you become, you know, you go for one of these. My father was a gardener. He worked for a brewery in Calgary. And you know, I never wanted to be stuck in that box. I always wanted to get outside that box. When I told my cousin once, I was going to go to university and go to medical school, he laughed at me and said, you got to be kidding. Where are you going to find the pot of gold to go to university? Yeah. And I said, I'm going to get loans. I'm going to work for it, and I'm going to get it done. He said, good luck. There's no way you're going to get there. And you know, it's things like that that I realize that it's not what happens to you, it's what you do with what happens, Laura, that there's so many things that we take for granted. And, you know, as a doctor, I realize that a lot of times we use a presumptive diagnosis when we're making our diagnosis. Most of the times we have our top 10 list of things it could be. Yeah. Yes. Number one.
Check another, you got to get another five.
Number one is always there. You know, this is our presumptive diagnosis, and that's what we're going with. But there's always in the back of our minds, what if we're wrong? What if it isn't number one? And, you know, the problem is a lot of tests come back, and they come back in a gray area. You know, they don't tell you something is right or wrong. You know, I look at this COVID epidemic going on right now, and people get a test that they're positive, that they're negative for COVID, yet they're still sick. And they get another test, and it's negative. And they get, and finally, that test turns positive. Now, every test has what we call type 1 and type 2 errors. Type 1 errors are when the test says you have it and you don't have it. Type 2 errors are where your test says you don't have it and you actually have it.
You do have it.
And you know, there's overlap between these errors, that you cannot have a test that has no type 1 errors and no type 2 errors. So you're always playing this game that most tests are almost right. And, you know, every test we do from the lab is actually a bell curve where we're comparing everything to everything else. So, you know, there is variability in tests. There's variability in answers. You know, a person that, for example, has thyroid disease, their thyroid might be normal right now. It could be on the borderline of normal, but that thyroid is just producing enough thyroid today, but then tomorrow it's petered out and run out of gas. So then you need to get some supplementation. But this is the problem with tests. When we look at tests in medicine, is they're not the be-all and end-all. You know, my disease is affecting a part of the brain called the lateral spinal thalamic tracts, okay? And there's little scars in that part of the brain, okay? So if you take 100 people, 99 out of the 100 or 95 out of the 100 with my symptoms would have had Lou Gehrig's disease. But there are other diseases that cause scarring there. So right now, if you ask 100 doctors what I have, you'll get 200 different diagnoses. You know, because the answer, it's a gray area. You know, there's very few people that live as long I have with Lou Gehrig's disease, other than Stephen Hawking's, the famous physicist that lived for a long, long time with that. And yet he was paralyzed and couldn't speak and couldn't do anything. But yet he made these wonderful scientific discoveries and everything else and wrote books and a movie was made out about him and everything else. You know, medicine is not black and white. It's gray.
I would say that life is not black and white. And this is a part, this is a, to me, is a really key part of the story, because anybody going through anything, and think about the times that we're in. I mean, here we have a world-class pandemic cruising around the world. People's lives, thankfully in Canada, you guys are a little smarter than we are down here. We have a different challenge going on down here in America.
I'd say multiple challenges.
Yeah, right?
Multiple challenges.
Well, this is why we do the show. Because there's so many people are facing things they've never seen before, as you did. And the challenge, the interesting thing to me, because and I'll just use an example. In my life, I decided early on, at 15 years old, I wanted to be a pilot. And like you, I had no money, I had no contacts, I didn't know how to fly a plane, I didn't know anybody who had a plane. I just knew I wanted to fly. And everybody, you know, looked at me and said, well, you know, you don't have the grades and you're not going to do it, and it's so expensive, and blah, 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 everything. So for 16 years, I chased that dream. And at the age of 28, I finally was able to get into pilot school. It wasn't until I was 30 that I actually was flying an airplane for a living. But I held on to that for 16 years. And, you know, one of the parts of your story is getting into medical school. As I recall, you had tried a number of times to get into medical school.
There were two places along the way that I, you know, one was to get into medical school. I get a degree. I got a BSc honors in psychology. I applied for medical school. I was rejected. So I took an extra year and applied again. And I was accepted at the University of Alberta in Edmonton. And about a week after I got accepted, I was living in Calgary all my life. I got an acceptance at the University of Calgary after I had moved to Edmonton and decided to go to Edmonton. So at that point, I had a decision to make, and I decided to pursue my education at the University of Alberta. Now, at the end of this, I decided, when I was a medical student, I decided I wanted to be a dermatologist. Now, dermatologist is like a stone's throw through hell to get into, because it's so competitive. You know, you have to be perfect in everything to get into dermatology in this day and age. Well, I was far from perfect. So I decided that I wanted to pursue this. So how did I do it? Well, I started writing journal articles and letters to the editor when I was a medical student. So by the time I finished my medical studentship, I had written 30 or 40 articles. And the professors that were choosing people said, I want him. He can be my guinea pig. He can be my writer when I get.
Write my journals.
So I applied to a lot of dermatology schools for the first time. And again, I was rejected by everyone. And then I finally got accepted by the University of Minnesota. And I went from Canada. I went to the United States. I took my training at the University of Minnesota. And then I came back to Edmonton, where I practiced for 30 years. But, you know, each part along the way, I met huge resistance. I mean, how do you get to be a dermatology resident without the right connections, without the right pedigree, without going to Harvard or Yale, without your parents going to those schools, without the deep pockets that allow you to get there? Well, I was able to do it on my own merits.
Well, and those are the things, when we come back from the break, I want to kind of pursue that, because Very much so in my story, as in yours, there are a number of challenges that I have met in my life where it was not, you know, especially here in America, we're very much into the 10-minute fix, short-term thinking. I'm going to buy a stock for, you know, a year, make $1 million. I just want it to happen now. Yet in life, I found that many times that there is a much, much longer path, and it takes much, much more energy to stay focused on that thing. And to me, a lot of that, you know, we talk about dream on, fly high, live adventurously. The dream part of that is a real important part, because you have to have something in your head that says, I'm not going to accept that. I'm going to keep going. And then I'm not going to accept that and keep going. And then there's always that question, you know, if you've tried 10 times, are you done, or do you go for 11? And then at 11, do you go for 12? Before we go, though, tell us real quick that you wrote the book, Secrets of Fantastic, Living a Fantastic Life. How do people get a hold of you, and how can they get that book?
You know, if they want to find out more about me, just go to my website, Dr. D.R. Allen, A-L-L-E-N, Lyka, that's Lyka.com. If you'd like my book, please go to the site, fantasticlifebook.com, because if you buy it from there, I can give 20% of what the proceeds are to charity. And the charity Harriet and I want to give it to are to help women in shelters that are escaping domestic abuse. And that way we can ping the money to the community that it's in. So if somebody buys it from your city, Laura, we can give it there. If we give, so that's at fantasticlifebook.com. And we would love you to be part of that. And to help us with this dream of ending domestic violence. We would love to see that on a worldwide basis.
Yeah. Well, and anybody who's heard Harriet's story, that's its own incredible story. And that's in a super cause. And I think it's an incredible way to give back to the community. Alan, when we come back, I want to continue down that road of what keeps us working on our dream, and when maybe you have to switch back. If those of you that are out there, stick with us just for a couple seconds as we get a commercial break in here. And when we come back, we'll talk to Dr. Lyka about how you can hang on to your dream and reach the results that you're looking for. This is Laura Meeks, and I'm on The Laura Meeks Show. See you right back here.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
Stuck in a roundabout of dysfunction? Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Aubert. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Aubert. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyaubert.com. That's drkathyaubert.com.
Hi, this is Kimberly Carlson, and I would love for you to tune in to All In Healing Radio, where together we will begin to experience health, happiness, and harmony in all areas and aspects of life. Join us every first Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. on TransformationTalkRadio.com. All In Healing will help you release layers of negative beliefs and energies for radiant health, deep joy, and greater abundance. Visit me at KimberlyCarlson.com.
Are you ready to awaken to your divine and true potential? Tune into a spirited exchange radio with me, Carrie Kadambi, every second and fourth Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. We discuss the evolution of the modern mind and how the power of awakening, healing, and connecting allows us to step into living a life of love in action. For more information about me, visit thedivineguidancegift.com.
Get your goddess groove on with me, Laura Hosford. Tune in every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com, where I offer you authentic channel messages of love, inspiration, and heart-healing grace. Get your goddess groove on. When the goddess speaks, everyone listens. For more information, visit LauraHosford.com. That's LauraHosford.com.
Hey, this is Laura Meeks. Welcome back to the Laura Meeks Show. We come to you every other Wednesday on Transformation Talk Radio. We are happy to be on this network. Today we are talking to Dr. Alan Leica. For many, many years, world-class cosmetic dermatologist. And as he told us earlier, he has moved on to more of a personal development, community-driven life, right? One of the things I find interesting, and I want to start here, Alan, community. One of the things that we talked about, or you talked about when you were talking about buying your book, is that if you buy from a certain spot, then you get a chance to give back to the community. How important is community?
You know, to me, community is a lot, and I think people have to take a chance and pay it forward always. I think they have to give in order to get. And I think in this world, it's too much concentration on the getting and not the giving. And to me, I think giving is very important. And on every show I'm on, I challenge the audience to do something for their neighbor today that they wouldn't regularly do. I ask them to, maybe they see their neighbor having difficulties, or maybe they have a car and they can go get the groceries for their neighbor, or maybe they can go to their closet and find they have 20 shirts and they only need two of them, and they can go and get those shirts in good repair and give them to charity, because there are people without them. And you know, food banks right now, shelves are bare, because there's so many people that are hungry today and don't have the wherewithal to feed themselves. Now, there's no driving force in this world that's more dangerous than hunger, because hunger drives all sorts of problems and causes so many things that are crazy. So I would like people, like when they go to the grocery store, buy something extra and give it to the food bank. You know, if you have the wherewithal to do so, help people that need it. Help with these things, because really the world will be a better place than you had it yesterday if you make that little donation today.
Yeah, you know, you and I were chatting a little bit about the difference between Canada and America. One of the challenges that I have, I grew up in an era where maybe it's just a perception because you're a kid and you're hearing stuff, but it seems like a kinder, gentler place. And one of the things that concerns me a little with the America that we're dealing with right now is that there is kind of this, it's what I call the Super Bowl mentality. We have capitalized on the idea that competition helps drive people to a higher level. And I think in a lot of the work that you and I have done, and there is, and we'll kind of get back to this, there is a need to have and hold on to your dream and to make sure that you have the competitive drive and spirit to make it happen. My challenge, though, is that we have extended that like to an extreme where where it's all about winning or losing the Super Bowl. My team did, or your team did, and it's the winning, not the competition. It's not the game. It's whether you won and got the trophy or not. And now we're kind of in a spot where it's my team. In American politics, it's kind of like my team or your team. We want to win, and we're past the spot of trying to win because we want a better country. We want to win because we want to win. And
you know, I think
now we're losing the idea of community. That's
well, I think John F. Kennedy said it well. Do not ask what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I think those are important words. And I'd like to take this back for a minute to this thing about dreaming and reality. I wrote this in my book, and it is this. I believe that dreaming is stronger than reality. Desire is more potent than apathy. Hopes are more powerful than despair. Joy always triumphs over sorrow. Laughter is the ultimate cure for man's foibles. And I believe that love is stronger than hate and is the strongest gift of all. And you know, love is one of those things, Laura, that if you give, you get a lot more back than you gave to begin with. Now, the same is true of hate, unfortunately. But I think love is stronger than hate. And by giving and loving people, I think we will see more of that. And I think right now we're at a day and age where we can truly make a difference in the world by bringing in those principles and bringing in those things. I think this is with baby steps. It doesn't take a lot. You just have to do a little to make it a little bit better. You don't have to go and reshape the planet. You know, your neighbor's lawn needs to be mowed.
Yeah.
And you've got a strong back. Well, why don't you go and help him do it? Maybe he's feeble. Maybe he's under the weather. Maybe he's got, maybe your neighbor needs some cookies today. You know, maybe your little dozen of cookies will make the world a better place. Maybe just little things like that will make it a better place for us.
Well, and I think that is so true. You know, in Minnesota, it snows very much like Canada. And, you know, when you're a little kid, parents would say, why don't you go next door and shovel her sidewalk? You know, she's older. She can't. Oh, Mom, you know, I have to go over there. It's like, yeah, we're going to help our neighbor. And it's important. I think, you know, part of the value of the show and you writing your book and the things that you and I are doing out in the world are to connect to people to say that it's much more powerful and much more rewarding to share in community the things, the gifts that you have, than it is to just reach some level and I got mine. You know, why would I shovel next door? I saved up my money and I have somebody shovel my walk and they'll have to do their walk and that's my world and that's their world. But you know what? We are, you know, as much as a teenager, you think, and I think back to being 18, you know, as much as you think that you've got the world by the horns and that you know how to do everything that you need to do, it truly takes a community. It was kind of a...
Well, you know, even in this COVID epidemic, you know, wearing a mask does not necessarily protect you, but it protects the other person from your germs. So one of the greatest gifts you can do is to wear a mask to protect somebody that is otherwise unprotected. So it's an act of giving to do. It's not an act of weakness. It's not an act of cowardice. It's an act of giving to help somebody else that might otherwise not be protected. And when I look at the things that have been going on and how terrible it is out there with how many cases there are.
Yeah. You know,
we've got, 21 million in the world now? And the doubling time is like every 2 days or something like that?
Well, and
crazy.
A quarter of them are down here in one of the most advanced societies on the planet. But I agree with you. I think that the challenge that I find myself fighting is that there are a group of people that are so convinced that they want to win, whatever winning means, that it's us against them, and that whatever you're saying about this mass protecting somebody else, who cares? I have to earn a living. I need to go to work, and I don't care whether you die or not. It's about me and not about you. I want to win. And in the end, you're going to be standing alone.
Well, you know, in all this cloud, I think there may be a silver lining. And, you know, when I look back at this time where we've literally had to take a little bit time to ourselves, well, it's a good time. You know, I've been able to produce one best-selling book, a number one best-selling book in the pandemic of 2020. Just last week, another book I wrote with Jack Canfield called The Pillars of Success became a best-selling book as well. And there will be a third one out very shortly that I've co-written with Corey Poirier called Business Life and the Universe that'll be released in the next week or so. So, you know, I've used this time to help people get better messages. And so there will be three best-selling books in my camp and the great pandemic of 2020.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting that you say that, because that right now, Annie and I are writing our book, Major Transformation, Loving Without Limits, which is kind of the replay of how a couple, Annie and I, could have gone through a gender transition and still stayed married for 35 years. We've got three kids, two grandkids, four dogs. We got still living a good, a happy and productive life, even having what for many people might be a challenge. But that, you're right. I mean, I love your saying, this is part of your book too. It's not what happens to you, but what you do with it, what happens. Is the pandemic came and you could just sit at home and cry, or you could write a book, that book that you've always wanted, or you could be writing the song that you've always wanted to write.
You know, if you're given lemons, Laura, you can be moanful that you've been given lemons, or you can make lemonade, or even better yet, maybe a lemon meringue pie. You know, why not take what you're given and turn it into something else? You know, it was Gandhi that said, you know, if you're a street sweeper, be the best street sweeper that you can be. Be the person that you really should be. Go and be the best at it that you can. Now, I don't know too many people that try to do that. You know, that's always the victim mentality. Oh, woe's me. Look at what's happened to me. Look what's going on here. Look what's happened. And I don't, you know, one of the things when I was a cosmetic doctor is I used to give free scar correction to people that had these terrible scars that were burn victims and burn survivors. And I was surprised at how many would say, I don't want to be helped. I don't want to have a normal life. I'm going to use my scars to get people to have pity on me. And so, you know, we have the technology and scar correction now to almost make all these scars go away. You know, the person doesn't have to live with these anymore. And it's amazing how few people accept the help and move to the next level and give some of that help back to others.
Well, now let's talk about that for a second. I mean, I had a dream to fly. I realized after a long time that one of the things I find interesting about dreaming and the power of dreaming, and I would agree with you wholeheartedly, hope and joy goes so much farther, and building your dream takes you to such a higher level, yet so few do it. Now, when I was in college, I had a college roommate, Jim, that he felt strongly that I was gifted. I was gifted with this desire. I when he met me, I was anything and everything. If I could read a flying magazine, I would read it. If I could go to the airport and see an airplane, I'd go do it. Whatever I could to connect to the world of flying was what I was going to do. And he said, you're so passionate. I wish I had passion. I was born without passion. I guess you're the lucky one. You got the passion and I didn't. Do you think some of us are just blessed with this passion and that the rest of the people just have to wait around?
You know, I think what it takes is a mindset transformation to realize these things are going on. I think it's very easy to accept what you're given and stay in that lot. I think it takes a lot more courage to step outside of that. You know, the only time courage happens is when you're afraid. You know, you really have to step outside of that afraid zone. And that's when you get to the level that you need to be. All it does is take a baby step to do so. And yes, you may fail around on the way. You may fall flat on your face.
Yeah.
How many times did you have to try to become a pilot and not get there?
Thousands. And you know, one of the things that I kind of along that line, and this is kind of what I'm getting at. It's very, people get very excited. They can listen to the radio show and they go, oh man, okay, tomorrow I'm going to, you know, lose 10 pounds. I'm going to be on the treadmill. And after 3 days, they're like, you know, forget it. I'm just, you know, I can do it. I want to fly airplanes after the first rejection. You know, I want to be a dermatologist. Hey, they didn't want me. I guess I'll go do something else. So somewhere you and I and others have had the thing that said, no, forget it. I'm just going to keep going. And to me, in my line of work, I find that is built, that everybody has the power. My roommate had the power, but it's built. When I wanted to fly airplanes, I did anything and everything. And I love your term, baby steps. I would ride my bike 10 miles out to the Flying Cloud airfield over a bunch of hills and dales to stand at the fence and just watch people start airplanes and fly them, and then I'd ride my bike home. Why? Because that just gave me more fuel to do the next thing. And, you know, somehow, some way, my hope is that as people are listening to this show and they're thinking, you know, because when I think about your story and the fact that he says, okay, here's the deal. I'm a doctor. I've done all the tests. You have Lou Gehrig's, just pack it up. You're going to go. Somewhere in there, you said, no, I'm going to keep looking. They have this internet thing. And it wasn't easy. You had to connect to the modem and you had to drive. There was no Google. You can't just, you know, what other things might Lou Gehrig's use? You had to like go to specific sites and do research. But you kept going until all of a sudden all the forces came together. And to me, in my life, you know, when I was in college, I accepted a scholarship. I needed a scholarship in ROTC to get into pilot training. I accepted a scholarship, and then at the last second, the guy goes, oh, no, wait, this is a navigator scholarship. But don't worry, you can change that next year. I signed on the dotted line. That cost me 10 years. 4 years of college and 6 years in the Air Force as a navigator that I had to endure because I couldn't apply until I got past my commitment for navigator school. All because this one guy lied to me and said, oh, don't worry, we can change it, when it was not true. He retired that summer. He needed somebody to sign on the dotted line. He got me. Now, somebody would say, well, that was horrible. You know, that was you should have given up at that point. But in reality, here's the interesting thing I learned, and this is part of what I would tell people. What I learned was this, is that had I gotten on, I was a psych major in college. I love being a psych major because really all I had to do was justify whatever I was saying. It was just kind of more talking and justifying than I actually had to memorize anything. When I got to navigator school and finally into pilot training, I realized that had I got out of college and gone straight into pilot training, I would have never made it. It was so hard. It involved so much memorization in so short a period of time that I would have never made it. So in the end, the universe gave me a new path. I didn't realize it, but that the path that I was on was the path I needed to get to pilot training so that I could pass and be a pilot.
But also, you know, I'm going to hazard a guess that the things you learned when you were in a navigator helped you so immensely that you were a pilot that it was beyond belief. You could have never become as good of a pilot as you did without that. You know, when I look at the amazing feat that Captain Scully did, landing a plane on the Hudson, and how did he do that? It's because this was prior training. If he didn't have all that in his saddlebag, do you think there would have been a snowball in hell that he could have landed a plane on the Hudson like that?
Right.
And I mean, he had a split second to make that decision, and he landed that damn plane.
Well, and it's funny because as a pilot, and I flew B-52s, huge airliner-type airplanes, it was common knowledge in our world that it would be impossible to land that jet on the water because once the engines hit, it would just tumble. And we had a lot of experience watching other airplanes, 737s and others, hit water in different parts of the world and tumble. So when he was going to go down, it's like, okay, that's it. He's dead. And lo and behold, he did it. Now, part of that was, you're right, he had experience as a glider pilot. And he's like, hey, I'm gonna keep it up. And then he's settling down and there you go.
But you know, also the fact that he had so little time to make this decision. I mean, it was the birds hit the plane is going down.
Going down, and we're over the middle of Manhattan.
We're not going to fly this plane into Manhattan.
This is not like squeezing it in between the two buildings. This is not going to happen. So but to go back to the fact that, I mean, you pressed on, you kept going till you found a solution. When you see people get rejected the first time, they go, okay, fine, I'm just going to lay down. I just want to like grab you and say, no, just where do you want to go? Just let's take a baby step. This journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step, right?
So absolutely.
To me, so much of it is just taking that next step. Well, we're getting near to the end of the show. Let's tell them again where we can get the book.
Well, first, before I do that, Laura, I want to give all your guests a special present. Oh, I want to give them 52 golden pearls. And the way they do that is they text me the words golden pearls, two separate words. The second word, pearls, has an S on it. So text me golden pearls to 1-819-717-2515. That's 1-819-717-2515. And I will send all your guests a golden pearl every week for the next 52 weeks. Because these will act as mind frames to reframe yourself every week. If you're in a bad shape, it'll bring you out of it every Tuesday. And this will be like some manna from heaven every Tuesday that you will get a new facelift, a new way of looking at things, because I really want your audience to do better. This is my gift to your audience to help them through this time. If they'd like to buy my book, there's a lot of wisdom in it. You can get it at www.fantasticlifebook.com. Fantasticlifebook.com. Now, if you're a gold member or something of Amazon, go to amazon.com and buy The Secrets to Living a Fantastic Life book there and send me your receipt and I will still give 20% of it to that. If you'd like to find me, a world-class speaker and coach, look up DrAllenLyka.com, DrAllen, Lyka, LYCKA.com. There's a lot of information there. I have a great website, some great stuff to share with you, and I'd love you to go there and learn a little bit more. If you'd like my co-author, Harriet Tinka, she's also on that site. So you can also find out about her. And if you'd like both of us to be a guest speaker on your podcast or things like that, go to DrAllenLyka.com and check us out, because we would love to be on your show. We would love to help you. If you have a speaking engagement that you need somebody to fill, we will do it. Now, we can't travel right now, but guess what? Zoom helps to take us around the world. And I've been in Scotland. I've been in Florida. I've been in Washington, D.C. all in this last week. And, okay. And now I'm on Laura's show right now. Yeah. So I've been Zooming all around the world in order to make this a better place.
All right. Well, super, super. With that, I'm going to end the show. I will attest, I still am getting the pearls of wisdom. It is a great baby step to take if you're down in the dumps. Get that and get that done. We'll post it on the bottom. With that, I gotta say it's been really fun, Alan, to have you on the show again. Thanks so much. And this is Laura Meek signing out. Until next time, Laura Meek Show. Thanks for listening.
Laura, bye-bye. Thank you.
Listening to the Laura Meek Show. Dream on, fly high, live adventurously on Transformation Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in, and we hope you'll join us next month as Laura helps you find your unique gifts so you can bring them to the world. For more information on Laura Meeks or to listen to past shows, visit her website at flyhighliving.com. Check out her hit Dream On 12-week course, where you get the personal attention you need to fly high in your new life.